John Ray has come to visit for a few minutes, and he is a member of the Management Committee of the International Anglican Family Network. John, welcome to you. I wonder if you could help us understand. I mean, it's pretty natural for any church to be involved in a supportive role in terms of families, but in terms of the International Anglican Family Network, what that's about, what does it stand for?
It comes from quite a early recognition that wherever you go around the communion, family has to be a major concern and interest of the church. Some churches are faced with very local difficulties caused by war or poverty or local circumstances, but sometimes very similar problems as other parts of the global communion, like, for example, the breakdown of marriage, the experience of childhood when parents are often forced through economic circumstances to be trying to hold down more than one job each, and the experience sometimes of elderly people or people who are sick. And what differs around the communion sometimes is the scale of these sort of challenges, but also the enterprise and the initiative that's been shown by the local church. And it's very exciting to go and visit somewhere in a different culture, perhaps, where a problem that you're all too familiar with is being tackled in a very simple and successful way, and sometimes in a way that you can quite easily adapt and replicate in your own backyard, so to speak. But the difficulty is communication and sharing of this sort of information, these sort of understanding and ideas. And that's the primary focus, I guess, of the family network, to try and support and affirm the work of frontline practitioners on behalf of the church, people who are either providing programs or are managing and developing very simple practical programs that are part of the family ministry of the church, and to share information between those people, to share ideas, and really to form an informal network where there can be some mutual support going on as well as the ongoing exchange of ideas and the strengthening of family ministries. The same sort of understanding and awareness is actually very helpful to the leaders of our church as well, because they have a pastoral ministry, and that can be helped to be more sensitive if they understand what the causes of some of the family-related problems and challenges are, what some of the consequences are, and they can be supportive of their staff, they can be directly supportive of people who are affected by it. Also, they have the potential, because they're often well-respected leaders, of a prophetic role. And it's important that they do understand what they're talking about if they're going to speak out about an issue. So the family network has got a responsibility to them as well, and to not just our church leaders, but somebody like the Anglican Observer at the United Nations, who has the advantage of walking the corridors of power there. And sometimes the sort of issues and the credibility of what the church is actually doing in those in relation to those issues can be very helpful to her in deciding what issues to take up and tackle, and she has the credibility of the church behind her if it's actually active in these fields. And by the same token, the leaders of the church and the frontline workers, it's good for them to know what governments around the world have got on their priority list, and why isn't the family there, or why isn't women in poverty there, or you know, issues like this, the victims of war or refugees and migrants and the consequences for family life of that sort of thing.
Do you find, you talked about supporting frontline workers and that. How is it that you do that? How do you try to accomplish that kind of support? Is it through websites and emails and things, or are there other ways that you do it?
I think the majority of people who signal that they value the family network are actually people who don't have electronic communications at their disposal. There are vast tracts of our global communion that are still operating in fairly basic circumstances. I'm thinking of settings where not only is there not computers and email and websites and that sort of thing, but maybe there isn't even electricity. And yet the church is there and often a very important organ in local communities and so on. And it's people working in circumstances like that that are behind the reason that we are publishing our newsletter, which happens three times a year, in paper form. And we get feedback from places like South America and Africa and so on, not just the welcome for it in its format and its content, but also the fact that it's printed on robust paper, because for many of our members, informal members, it's probably the only development document they get. And I know of one or two places where it probably passes and is read avidly by 30 sets of hands before it finally collapses or gets too grubby to read or something like that. So it's only a more recent thing. I think it was about maybe 1994 when we developed a web version of it as well. And that's fine for some people. But I think we're still taking very seriously supporting people in the front line in maybe the global south and maybe away from the towns where most of the church members maybe are in that particular diocese or province.
Does language become a question here? Is your newsletter only in English or is it published in a variety of languages?
It is only in English, and that's a real frustration we've lived with for, to my knowledge, 16 or 18 years. We've two or three times sought means of voluntary translation into Spanish and Portuguese and French and Swahili. The problem is we haven't been able to get the funds, not just only to give maybe an occasional honorarium to somebody who's prepared to translate it free, but actually to print it. And we've even explored in Spanish-speaking parts of the communion or French-speaking parts of the communion, whether if we gave them the format of it and the content of it, whether they could do the translation themselves, and maybe even without the luxury of photographs, just print it up and, you know, in an office and put it out on duplicated sheets or something like that. But that's never really got to satisfactory to first base. But it's a recognition we travel with, and we dearly wish we could do that, because it would allow the material that we're providing, that is being provided for us by frontline people, to get to a wider audience. And it also means that not only would a wider audience of people who are in church ministry benefit, but they would also be able to contribute their stories and their initiatives as well. And the network newsletter would be richer for that.
How does the Anglican Family Network structure itself? Now, you're part of a management committee. Mm-hmm. Is that a large group or a small group? Or
it's not a substantial heart to the network. I think from we've had a half-time coordinator who happens to be based in London for quite some time now. It's been one of the blessings of the network that we've had the same person, a very gifted person who, although she is on a half-time payroll, does far more than that. She doesn't have an office. You occasionally will see her in the Anglican Communion office in London, sort of using the corner of her desk on a half day that she's come to London because she's got a meeting or something. But bedroom in her house is where really the debris of the heart of the Anglican family network is. The management committee are all volunteers. I come from Scotland to a meeting once every two or three months in London. There are people there, some from London, but actually representing the wider communion. So there's an African dimension, a South American dimension. There are very knowledgeable representatives from the two main mission agencies, USPG and CMS. We've currently got a very able person from the board of the Mothers Union in London. And that gives, when we're planning a newsletter and thinking about who we can contact and ask for a contribution, a written contribution, that sort of thing, that gives us access to a much wider range of networks, all Anglican and contacts and so on. So the funding, I think the annual budget's probably about £24,000. That covers the cost of the network coordinator half-time, the print, the design, the printing and the postage of newsletters, part of me being able to be here for 3 or 4 days, which wasn't budgeted for and will yet again take us close to the edge. But right from the start, we've been extremely fortunate that although our budget doesn't sound a great deal, it's not easy to raise, but two of the smallest provinces in the Anglican Communion have supported the family network right from the start, and they still are doing today. And that example, we've been delighted about 4 months ago that a third very small province has decided that it's going to commit itself for the next 3 years. And now that guarantees us over half of our budget every year for the next 3 years. And the rest, well, it just seems to come, but only just.
You know, I can't resist asking you to name the three small provinces who are clearly setting an example.
Two of them don't want to be known, and the third one isn't bothered about it. So one of them doesn't want to be known because they don't want anybody else beating a path to their door and seeking funds.
Got it. Fair enough. Now, are there occasions where you try to hold a global conference or you try to bring, you mentioned about meetings in London, but are there larger gatherings from time to time?
Yes. Back in 2003, we had a regional consultation for Africa in Nairobi. The theme was violence in the family. We had 37 people from 19 different African countries. In 2007, with the help of the Anglican Church in South Korea, we had a South Asia regional meeting in Seoul, and there were people came from 9 different countries, including some very interesting ones like Burma and China, as well as the more normal players like Hong Kong and Singapore and Philippines, Thailand, Japan, and one man from Australia. And they've both been very, very interesting consultations, because a different sort of chemistry and dynamic results in a situation like that. People get very excited and very interested and learn a lot from each other and share a lot with each other. And for me, I'm very interested in the fact that if I just use the African consultation, for example, the people that came to that, who'd been selected to come to that, were genuinely frontline grassroots operators in family ministry, not the sort of people that get to go to conferences and so on every 10 minutes. And because of that, they went away from the consultation and did things back home that were additional to what they were doing before they came. And there were some very interesting, neat, simple initiatives that went on that increased the impact on the work that was going on and the benefit to families and that sort of thing. And it wasn't until we got a bit down the track that we suddenly realised that that was a very good consequence of the sort of people that we were mainly engaging with. Similarly, in Seoul, although we were focused on violence in the family again, there were some very different issues came out from the African consultation, because that region with countries like Thailand and the Philippines are into mail order brides and the impact that that has, because a lot of the women folk find themselves fetching up in abusive situations. Obviously, there are a lot of migrant workers, particularly the Philippines, where there's a huge number of people leaving that country every day to seek work elsewhere so they can send money back to their families, and the impact on family life of that sort of thing. And one of the things that's had fruit just today from that meeting was, because they're so involved in migrant ministry, they were saying, why is there no refugee and migrant network for the Anglican Communion? We hear it's a big problem in Africa and in Europe and et cetera, et cetera. Why is it not on the radar of the Anglican Communion? And I happened to be there and said, well, in actual fact, in 1984, there was agreement that there would be a refugee and migrant network. The problem is it's never quite got off the ground. So they came up with, amongst the recommendations at the end of it, that really the Anglican Communion should re-establish this. And they asked me to take that away and speak to the Secretary General and see what I could do about it. And the result was today, when we've now got a host province in Hong Kong, and I must say I'm absolutely delighted about that. But that's another tangible result that came out of just a face-to-face meeting that was talking about violence in the families. And, you know, they're enormously rich. You never quite know where they're going to go, but because of the sort of people that come in through the door, it's just like really good pay dirt that you're quarrying. And even in the groups that we've had here, the exchange between the people sitting around in the two group sessions has been enormously rich, and describing not just some of the key challenges where they come from, but also two or three neat things the church is doing about it. And people clearly were interested to hear, oh, that, I'll talk to you about that afterwards. That's what networking is all about, really.
In terms of your publication, I'm thinking about people who perhaps are going to the website, have seen something about it, would be interested in receiving the publication. How do they go about doing that? Is there a way to subscribe on the website?
By subscribe, I presume you mean ask for a copy, not pay for it, because it's available free. I mean, if people want to pay for a copy or pay for more than one copy so that it can go to their companion dioceses somewhere in the global south, that we welcome that with open arms, but that's not the intention. Yes, it's very easy to subscribe on the website. And we work very hard in face-to-face situations to try and, whenever we meet somebody from a different part of the communion, who's involved in family ministry in your neck of the woods? Do you think they would like this? You know, can you put us in touch, give us their postal address or whatever, and we make sure a copy gets to them and ask them if they'd like to go on receiving it. So there's been quite a bit of hooking going on here, and still is.
And still is. John, thank you so much. And thank you for your work with the International Anglican Family Network, and we wish you every blessing in the group's future ministry.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.